1775, generations of Americans have fought for our ideals and our principles. American warriors secured the freedoms to create the United States of America. They fought to end slavery. They joined with allies to win two world wars. They have responded with valor and honor whenever called. And they have liberated more people around the globe than any military in the history of the world. Our all-volunteer forces of guardsmen, soldiers, sailors, marines, airmen, and reservists continue the mission begun at Lexington and Concord. Less than 1% of Americans serve in our armed forces. The least the rest of us can do is to pay attention and get engaged. This program is produced and broadcast for that purpose. It is presented live and worldwide at 1041kqth.com. To engage, call 520-751-1041. The American Warrior is on the air.
Welcome to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. While leading his platoon on a special mission to capture a high-value Al-Qaeda operative in Iraq, Navy SEAL Jason Redmond's unit came under attack. Redmond was struck by machine gun fire, first in the right elbow and then in his face. Jason survived, but he would have to undergo 37 surgeries, a total of 190 hours under anesthesia, 1,200 stitches, 200 staples, 15 skin grafts, 15 screws, 8 pins, and a tracheotomy. There's more, but that's an amazing story in and of itself. But there's bravery in battle, and there's bravery after battle. One pity-filled visitor too many while in his hospital recovery bed drove Jason to take a pen, put it to a bright orange piece of paper. He wrote the following and taped it to his hospital room door. Attention to all those who enter here. If you're coming into this room with sorrow or to feel sorry for my wounds, go elsewhere. The wounds I received, I got in a job I love, doing it for people I love, supporting the freedom of a country I deeply love. I am incredibly tough and will make a full recovery. What is full? That is the absolute utmost physically my body has the ability to recover. Then I will push that about 20% further through sheer mental tenacity. This room you're about to enter is a room of fun, optimism, and intense rapid regrowth. If you're not prepared for that, go elsewhere. Signed, the management. That statement, that piece of orange paper, now hangs framed on a wall at Walter Reed National Military Medical Center. Our guest today is the young man who wrote that statement, and he's joining us live on the telephone. Welcome to American Warrior Radio, Jason Redmond.
Ben, hey, thanks so much for having me on. Awesome intro. I appreciate it. Well, so looking forward to talking today.
Jason, it's an awesome intro because you wrote it.
I'm blessed. I tell everybody the same thing. I penned it. So, and it's not necessarily my message. It's the message of so many wounded warriors. It's the message of the overcome mindset. I tell people, it is the message of the American spirit. That is the grit that built this country. And I'm just fortunate enough in a flash moment to have captured it in writing. And I believe that's what that sign represents.
Well, Jason, I'll tell you what that also represented. You're on the circuit now. You go around and you speak to groups and you write books and, heck, you even make movies, I guess. And I want to talk about that. But first, let's get to know Jason a little bit, because I think that's important. I know that's important to our story later on. You come from a family of service members. Your grandfather flew in World War II. I think you had an uncle that flew in World War II. Your dad was a paratrooper. Your brother and sister both serve, I think, Air Force and Marines, correct? Or did serve?
That's right. Yep. We pegged all the branches. So I guess one of my kids has to go in the Coast Guard now.
Good. Well, I'm sure they'd love to have you. So I guess was it sort of the nature of you as a kid growing up that you were inclined towards serving our nation in the military, or when did it pop for you?
No, absolutely not. I mean, from a very young age, my parents have a picture somewhere when I was about 3 years old running around the house in a fire helmet. It actually had a siren. It had a light and a siren on top. It drove them crazy. But I told him, I wanted to be a fireman, and that quickly transitioned to the military. I grew up, looking at my dad's old uniforms used to hang in the closet. I used to play with them. He had an old discarded parachute that he had gotten from the military. I used to play with that in the yard. I mean, from a very young age, all I ever wanted to do is go in the military. And probably when I was about, I'd say 14, my dad told me about the SEAL teams. He had met some SEALs that went through airborne school or had come to Fort Campbell, where he was stationed at the time, to do training. And he told me about them when I was about 14, and I just said, that's what I want to do. And I set my sights on that and never really looked back.
Well, you joined one of the most elite special forces unit in the world, not as well known back then as it is now, but the Navy almost didn't get you. I think the Army got you first, didn't they?
That is true. So fate plays an interesting hand in our lives. The recruiter at the Navy station at the time was a real old, salty, crusty son of a blank. It's funny. A lot of people have these visions in their minds that most SEALs are these, 6 foot two, 240-pound powerhouses. And although we definitely have guys like that, the average SEAL is about 5'10", 180. I'm not even the average SEAL. I'm a smaller guy. I'm about 5'8", 165, 170. But back then, when I walked into the recruiting station at 15, I was probably 4'11", 5 feet at most, and weighed about 100 pounds. And this crusty old salt basically chased me out of the office and said, stop wasting our time. Get out of here. And I kept trying to come back, and the guy kept chasing me out. So finally I got fed up and I said, screw you guys. I'm going to go join the Army. And I signed all the paperwork and I went to MEPS, the initial enlistment processing place, when I was a junior in high school. And believe it or not, I failed the airborne physical because I had ruptured my air drum when I was a kid. And the Army, of course, tried to talk me into, oh, you can do anything else. And I was like, look, man, I want to be either an airborne ranger or a Green Beret or nothing. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to the Army if I can't do those things. So, got out a little bit disappointed or left there. But there was a new recruiter at the Navy recruiting station when I left the Army recruiting station. And he said, what are you looking for? I said, I want to be a SEAL. I told him what happened with my ears. He said, hey, if you can get a note from a doctor that says you can equalize, I can get you into the SEAL teams. And that's exactly what happened and how I came full circle to go back into the Navy and go down the path to be a SEAL.
Jason, one of the messages that you communicate to groups or individuals or businesses when you're out speaking to them in your career now is the message of never quit. Don't quit. Boy, you and Buds, you probably looked at that bell a couple of times, but you said, I'll die before I quit.
That's right. And what I call that now, what I speak about, is the overcome mindset. And it is the essence, in my opinion, that enables success. I mean, you can be a great leader. You can put together a great team. You could even have a just rock solid research-based plan that everyone, all these experts out there, will say will be successful. But the real world, unfortunately, doesn't work that way. Plans go awry. Leaders make mistakes. Teams have, problems they encounter. So it is that relentless overcome mindset, that grit, this idea that no matter what adversity we encounter, over it, under it, around it, or directly through it, we're going to get to the other side. And I tell everyone that that is the single greatest thing that's led me to be successful. It's led me to be successful in the military. It enabled me to get through Buds, enabled me to get through some major mistakes I made as a young leader and recover my career. It enabled me definitely to get through my injuries. And even in business now, running a nonprofit and a for-profit, the ups and downs of business that anyone who runs their own company knows, those times when, you're a new fledgling business and you have employees and, you're up, you can't sleep because you're like, how are we going to make payroll? It was the overcome mindset that got me through those hard times.
Well, I tell you what, Jason, I want to interweave, because I've always been fascinated as a civilian, as a business person, I've always been fascinated with the lessons that can be learned and taken out into the civilian world from what you all have learned in the military. And I tell you what, we're just kind of preparing for this show today and reading your stuff. There's two main business lessons that jumped out of me, one that led to and supported the other. I want to get into that when we come back from the break, but just real quick before we do that, I've had a lot of guests on the show who joined up when the 9/11 attacks happened. You were involved in a program that took enlisted sailors to college, and you were, what, just in school a couple of weeks when that happened, but Thankfully, I guess somebody talked you out of just going right back in, huh?
That's right. I mean, I was still in, but I had 9/11 happened. I'd only been in school for a little under a month, and shocked me along with several other teammates that were in college with me as part of that program. And I knew in that second that we were going to war as a nation. And I got home, like so many of us, just reeling from this impact our country had taken. And I went back to my old SEAL team to probably the most respected. My commanding officer was probably one of the most respected leaders in the SEAL teams and probably in the special operations community, a legendary guy. And I went to him and I said, I want out of this program. I know we're going to war. Put me back in a platoon. I'm ready to go. And he said the most prophetic words that I think I've ever heard anybody said. He took one look at me and he said, Jay, this war is not going to end quickly. He said, this war will go on for decades, and we're going to need good operators and good leaders to be able to drive forward and fight this war. He said, you need to be patient. You need to go back to school. You need to finish, and then you need to come back and lead. And it took me a couple of years to get to that point, but I followed his advice, and I did just that.
Well, I tell you what, Jay, when we come back, let's talk about that first leadership lesson you learned when we come back. Tell us about Rambo Red. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. I've got Jason Redman, Navy SEAL, live on the phone. You're not going to want to miss it. Stick around.
Those who expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigue of supporting it. Now, back to the American Warrior.
Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. Your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're joined by Navy SEAL Jason Redman. Jason, I want to talk a little bit or a lot about leadership because I'm fascinated with just the things I've learned from you in the short time I've been preparing for this show, one of which... what I would call the first lesson for me was, so you go to college under the Seaman to Admiral program. You're coming out of college. We've been attacked. Your comrades, your fellow SEALs are at war. You're now an officer. You want to lead them. But you learn there's no shortcut to becoming a good leader. Tell us about Rambo Red, if you don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely. So as a young leader, I had been very successful as an enlisted SEAL, having served in leadership positions and even going on to be an instructor, and then got selected to go to college, like you talked about, that Seaman to Admiral program, and even excelled in college, making my way to become the battalion commanding officer for the largest ROTC consortium on the East Coast. And I think all of that, with a lot of young men, I see this in professional sports too. A lot of times when you reach an elite level, when you reach a pinnacle level, it's natural, unfortunately, to get a little enamored with yourself. And I think that's exactly what happened to me. And I thought a little too highly of my leadership abilities and stepped into this world as a SEAL officer, a SEAL leader, really thinking that I knew it all. And the problem with that is the world had dynamically changed since I left the SEAL teams 3 years prior to start college. You know, 9/11 had happened. All our tactics had changed. Everything had changed. And instead of humbling myself and saying, wow, I need to slow down and really rely on my guys to learn and recognize the fact that I don't know everything, I didn't. I fought against it and really started making some mistakes because I was hanging on so tight I wouldn't humble myself. And in turn, started doing what I knew how to do because I was stumbling. I started hanging out with the guys, which there's nothing wrong with leaders hanging out with their people. But the problem is if you are, put it bluntly, making an ass of yourself because you're drinking yourself stupid, it's damaging your credibility. So all of this kind of came to a head when we deployed to Afghanistan. And we were on an operation where I had an overwatch position. Our guys down in the valley got into a big firefight. And I was the furthest one forward with a machine gunner. And I saw an opportunity, a flash, where I said, wow, here's an opportunity. We can go down. We can support these guys down below in the valley. And I saw it as two things. One, I wanted to get in a fight. I had been on the edge of a lot of firefights, but for warriors, until you're directly in that line of fire, you truly have not been baptized by fire, if you will. You haven't been in it. And I craved that. I wanted that as a warrior to prove that I could stand up, you know, to the dragon's fire.
Mm-hmm.
And two, I saw, wow, you know, here's an opportunity to prove, because I'd been stumbling and struggling as a young leader with some of these issues I'd been encountering, I saw an opportunity for a shortcut. I saw, hey, rush down in this valley, help the guy, save the day. I mean, it's like something out of a movie. But the real world almost never operates like a movie. And I did that. I gave up the high ground. I moved down into the valley to try and support our guys. And I know a lot of people that don't understand military tactics say, oh, well, what's wrong with that? Well, there are a lot of things wrong with that. I won't even get into all the tactics. The bottom line, it was a bad decision that could have had catastrophic results. We could have got ourselves killed. We could have caused other members of our team to be killed or more people to be wounded. And what we directly did is we prevented air support from being able to come in and support those guys in that firefight at the time, because what I didn't know when I made that decision was they had already called aircraft in. And when I took our machine gunner off the top of that valley, off the top of that ridgeline to go down into that valley, we now were unaccounted for. Right. And we cannot drop bombs when we don't know where everybody is. So it was a pretty big mistake as a young leader. And it probably wouldn't have been so bad if I had owned it. When they pulled me aside and said, hey, what the hell were you doing? What the hell were you thinking? You put yourself in jeopardy. You put your, you know, machine gunner in jeopardy. You put your entire team in jeopardy. Instead of saying, you know what, you're right, and humbled myself, I fought against it. I said, you know, you guys are throwing me under the bus. I did what was right. I ran to the sound of the guns. You know, I did all the right things. And I think that led me down a road where they said, wow, you know, this guy, not only is he making bad decisions, he doesn't even see that he's making bad decisions. And it almost got me kicked out of the military. I had several people who said, he's dangerous. He's going to get our guys killed. He's going to get himself killed. If we can't humble him, this guy needs to go.
And, so this, you almost got driven not just off the SEAL teams, but out of the military altogether?
Correct.
Wow.
You know, there were several people that recommended what we call a Trident Review Board. The SEAL emblem is called the Trident.
Mm-hmm.
And if you make a grievous tactical error that could potentially put others' lives in jeopardy, we can take individuals to a Trident Review Board where we say, you know, this person's dangerous. We do not want them as a SEAL. And that was what was on the horizon. I'm very blessed and thankful that I had some leaders who believed in me and said, you know what, 95% of the time this guy's good. We've got these 5% moments we got to figure out how to fix. So when we got back from that deployment, the outgoing commanding officer and the incoming commanding officer had a meeting with me, and they basically said, hey, listen, knucklehead, we think you have potential, but right now nobody believes that, and everybody wants your head on a platter. And you got to figure out how to straighten up. So here's the deal. Any awards that you would have got from this combat deployment are gone. You're receiving nothing. We're putting a letter that's going to go in the commanding officer's safe that basically says, we question your leadership abilities and your tactical and operational abilities as a SEAL. And we're going to hold this letter for the next 2 years. You're going to do another platoon. You're going to do another leadership role. And basically, you better shine like a diamond and show us you have the ability to lead safely, effectively, and be a leader, be a SEAL tactical leader. If you mess up, this letter goes into your permanent record, which would have totally ended my career. Yeah. I would have been done. I would have had to get out of the military. And then the last thing they said, and we're sending you to U.S. Army Ranger School. We need to humble you, and that school will definitely humble you.
So you got your Army time after all, didn't you, Jason?
I did. I earned that. I earned the Ranger tab. And I tell you what, for all the Rangers out there, all those Ranger graduates, I have a lot of respect for you guys. I went into that school thinking it was going to be easy, thinking it was going to be a walk in the park, and it is not. It is a very, very hard school, and I learned a lot. So So
Jason,
brothers.
What I take from that, the business or the lessons that apply out in the lives of the rest of us, I take from that is, you know, it's kind of, you're not much of a leader if nobody will follow you. So you learned humility, and you learned to be accountable for your actions. Is that a pretty good Reader's Digest version of some of the lessons that came out of that for Jason Redman?
Absolutely. If you're going to be a leader, you've got to lead yourself first. That's one of the principal things that I teach people. And my old mentor, I think the most profound thing he ever said when I reached a moment where I thought I was going to where I was trying to quit, because I was convinced nobody would follow me when I went back to the SEAL teams. And this is what I tell anybody out there who wants to be a leader, whether they're in sports or business. He said to me, people will follow you if you give them a reason to.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to give them a reason to. And it starts with how you lead yourself.
Jason, we've got about, what we got, Ross, 2 minutes? 2 minutes before we have to take a hard break here. But I'd like to, you know, folks, I mean, this is very compelling. I want them to stick around. The heart of how I introduce this program, if you can, in about a minute and 45 seconds, you're a SEAL. I know you can do this. You know, sort of tease us with that fateful day in Iraq. You're leaving the platoon after that high-value target. I'm not real clear in doing my research. I know you got shot up real bad, but were you shot 7 times, 8 times, 3 times? How many shots did your body actually absorb, Jason?
So, end of the deployment, very successful deployment, had redeemed myself, had really established myself as a young leader and teammate, and a week from going home, walked into an ambush, myself and several members of my team. I was hit 8 times that we know of. Now, that's between the body armor and body. So we believe at least 5 rounds between my body armor, helmet, night vision, goggles, gun. And then I took 3 rounds to the body, 2 rounds to my left elbow and 1 round to the face.
Wow. That's a lot. I know Jay Dobbins may disagree, but that's a lot, Jason.
Yeah, I tell him his was a recreational round.
Don't say that. He's in Tucson. You might hear from him today. You never know. So
I'm gonna see him. I'm actually going to see him here in a couple of weeks. I love Jay. He is an amazing individual with an incredible story of his own. So I really enjoy hanging out with Jay.
Well, I tell you, along those lines, you mentioned the Trident. Nelson Miller sends his greetings. He said to say hello, and hopefully you guys will have a chance to check in together when you come back to Tucson as well.
I'm going to stop by and see him when we're out there. We're going to be out there for Freedom Expo, so if anybody is around, I'll be speaking. Jay Dobbins will be there, and I'm going to be selling books. Jay's going to be selling books. It's going to be a great event.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. You're hearing from him now. You get the chance to meet him in person at the Freedom Expo. That's coming up February 9th and 10th. Right here at the Sheraton El Conquistador. There are discounts if you're a member of our military. Great speakers, many of whom have been on American Warrior Radio before. We've got one of the good ones right here with us, Jason Redman, Navy SEAL. Stick around. We're going to hear more about his incredible story. And, you know, when the commander-in-chief tells you to come to his office because of a sign you put in your door, you darn well better do it. Jason Redman did just that. Stick around, folks. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We'll be right back.
Who expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigue of supporting it. Now, back to the American Warrior.
Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. We're joined by Jason Redman. Jason is a Navy SEAL who, boy, this guy earned all the medals he got, but also learned a lot while he was earning those medals. Jason, welcome back. We sort of talked before the break, and I led into this show talking about your wounds, and I mean, you just got all shot up, brother. You were pretty much a hot mess before those Night Stalkers pulled you out. I guess what really brought you notoriety, though, is that, well, I won't call it an oath, what you wrote and posted on your hospital door, which is powerful, and it remains at the hospital there to this day. Do you remember which person was in there showing pity that finally caused you to just break and say that's enough?
Ben, absolutely. I remember. I don't dime them out because
fair enough.
they were, I think they figured it out one day, a couple of years after it happened. They said to me, I'm the reason I was there. I'm the reason that there's the sign. And they were kind of shocked and ashamed. So I don't dime them out. But the bottom line, you know, it was a catalyst that made me say, no way am I going to feel sorry for myself. And I think that's so critical for anyone going through a catastrophic life event. It's too easy to feel sorry for ourselves and to fall deep down into that dark hole that, you know, these major catastrophic events create.
Now, Jason, normally when the Commander-in-Chief orders you to report to the White House, that's a bad day. But you inspired him so much with what you put on the door, he asked you to come down. Did he actually sign it as well, or what's the story behind that with President Bush?
He did. President Bush was so gracious to me and my family. I mean, it was just what an incredible, humbling opportunity to go to the White House, to go to the Oval Office. He spent 35 minutes with us. And thankfully, one of my old he was one of our task force commanders in Fallujah when I got shot up, happened to be a White House fellow. And he came in and told President Bush, you know, about some of the other operations we had been on and things we had done. And we brought the actual sign that I had on my hospital door, because I'll be honest, I didn't really know what to do with it. I didn't feel like it should hang in my house. I felt like it wasn't mine. I felt like it belonged to all wounded warriors out there. So President Bush signed it, and then we had it beautifully framed with the different four service emblems. We put in the Purple Heart, we put in the Afghan campaign and the Iraq campaign, and I wrote some words of encouragement, and we framed it. And it now hangs in the wounded ward at Walter Reed Bethesda Military Medical Center.
What, Jay, what was the immediate reaction of some of your fellow wounded warriors there in the hospital when you first taped that up to your door? General support, or they set up his meds, or what?
No, it really took on a life of its own very quickly. A New York firefighter, a group of them were visiting, and one of them took a picture and posted it online about the sign and about meeting me, and that went viral. And it went all across the military. It went across the country. I mean, I still meet people to this day. They're like, man, I remember when that was going around. And even to this day, it still has an impact. I am humbled whenever I'll meet a wounded warrior who told me how that sign made a difference for him, being in the hospital. And as he was going to surgery, he would look at the sign. Kyle Carpenter's a friend. He just sent me a picture a few weeks ago. For those who don't know who Kyle is, he's a Marine who jumped on a grenade and survived and earned the Medal of Honor. And Kyle just sent me a picture, I don't know, maybe a month ago, up there at the hospital with standing next to the sign. So it is truly amazing, something that, I'll be honest, in the moment I didn't put a lot of thought into, other than the fact that I refuse to feel sorry for myself, and I'm not going to let anybody else do it either, that it's had such a long-term impact that it has.
Wonderful. Now, I tell you there, I mentioned at the beginning of the show, Jay, that there's courage in battle and there's courage after battle. Let's lead to one of the next situations in your life. Folks, look up Wounded Wear, www.woundedwear.org. You, Jay, are going out, you're back stateside, you're going out into the world, you're still pretty shut up. Your face is caved in, you're wearing an eye patch, I would guess, at that point in time. And, you know, people have a natural tendency to sort of gawk and stare. And as I understand it, it wasn't that bothered you so much. It's just that when they would ask, they assumed it was a car accident, or you were, I don't know, a boiler blew up in the factory, and it started to sort of bug you that no one asked whether you were wounded in combat. Is that right?
Ben, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's 2007. We've been at war for 6 years now on two different fronts, both in Iraq and Afghanistan. And as I had more and more people ask me about these grievous injuries, they seemed shocked to find out that I had been injured on the battlefield. And that's just, it bothered me. I thought, man, we've got hundreds of thousands of troops that are, you know, deploying back and forth fighting these wars. And the average American doesn't even think about it. They don't think about the fact that we have young men and women who are over there fighting against this scourge, this evil that would love to get into America and create, you know, decimate American citizens. And we have these young men and women that are over there fighting it, and the average citizen just did not think about that fact. So, yeah, that was the catalyst that led me to start Wounded Wear. And for to date, we've given out almost $1.6 million in clothing to Wounded Warriors and gun clothing modifications. And now we're evolving the organization. We grew, so the new name is the Combat Wounded Coalition.
Mm-hmm.
Wounded Warriors is a program under that. We're even launching a new program this year called the Overcome Academy, which is a leadership program to get our Wounded Warriors back out in the community as leaders. Our tagline is developing the next greatest generation.
Now, Jay, tell us, because, you know, it's interesting, I was talking to producer Ross here. The reason we have American Warrior Radio is to educate, to try and address that growing gap between those who go to war and those of us who send you to war. And the sort of blissful ignorance of so much of the population out there. I'm the reverse of the situation you face. When I see someone with a prosthetic, I naturally think that they got it in war. You know, not that they might have had diabetes or it might have been a motorcycle accident. So tell our listeners, that first shirt that you commissioned, that you wore out there, tell us what it said.
So, yeah, out of many things in life, they're driven sometimes by anger and even hate, frustration. Oftentimes those can be a catalyst. So I got tired of all the stares and the gawks, and I came home one night from a post-surgery flight and went online and created this T-shirt, and it said, stop staring. Stop staring. I got shot by a machine gun. It would have killed you. And we put a flag on the back and called it Wounded Wear. And so, yeah, I wore it everywhere I went. If people stared at me, I'd just point at the shirt, and they'd get this shock look on their face. And finally, my wife, the long-haired admiral, said, you know, I think you're on to something, but you should probably tone back the rhetoric a little bit.
Well, but I tell you, folks, visit woundedwear.org to look at these. One of the images on one of the shirts is artwork that was taken off a scan or an x-ray of your skull, your actual skull, reflecting your wounds. There's a lot of white space there, or black space in this case.
Yeah, it was taken from a CAT scan that they had done to figure out how to put me back together. I will admit, I have a good friend who's an artist. Big shout out to Joey Nobody. But he took a little creative license. There's a hole, bullet hole, actually, in my forehead in that skull. And thankfully, that was actually in my helmet. The bullet, however it didn't hit me, it didn't hit me. But all the damage in the facial region, that was taken directly off that CAT scan. It was horrific damage. I am very fortunate that I had some of the best doctors in the world really put me back together.
And folks can learn more of the Combat Wounded Coalition. Your mission is to support and help get wounded warriors back out there. You mentioned the clothing kits you distribute. You also have, well, you take the warriors and families out. You've got something. Tell us real quick about the Jumping for a Purpose event. What is that, Jay?
So Jumping for a Purpose is an event that came about in 2010, the brainchild of a friend of mine, an ex-Army Ranger, and he said, what do you think about taking Wounded Warrior skydiving? And, of course, I had jumped when I was on active duty. I had been disqualified, so I wanted to get back out jumping. But the bottom line about jumping out of an airplane is the mental hurdle to actually jump out of an airplane. Most people will never jump out of a plane. You know, they would say, there's no way I'm jumping out of a perfectly good airplane. But we used it as a tool to show wounded warriors they're still alive. Hey, I don't care if you're missing limbs. I don't care if you are paralyzed. I don't care if you're burned. I don't care if you're blind. You know, you're still alive. And if you can throw yourself out of this plane, you know beyond a shadow of a doubt by the time you touch the ground that you are still alive and that you can conquer anything. And that was the idea behind Jumping for a Purpose. And we've jumped over 350 warriors now. We actually have incorporated the Jumping for a Purpose idea into the Overcome Academy because I feel like it's such a critical component. In order to lead yourself, you've got to get outside your comfort zone. And you've got to push yourself forward. You've got to force yourself to step off the ramp of life, no different than stepping off the ramp or out the door of an aircraft.
Wonderful stuff. I tell you what, Jason, it's always great with great guests, but the time flies right by. We've got one segment left coming up, folks, with Jason Redmond, Navy SEAL. Piece of bright orange paper and a Sharpie inspired the world. He continues to inspire. He's coming to Tucson. You got a chance to hear him in person. at the Freedom Expo coming up February 9th and 10th. When we come back, Jason, I want to talk a little bit more about the lessons you share from people and then a couple of personal BBG questions for you. Stick around, folks. We'll be right back.
My daddy served in the Army. We lost his right eye, but he flew a flag out in our yard. Till the day that he died, he wanted my mother, my brother, my sister, and me to grow up and live happy in the land of the free.
If you want to discuss those who serve the red, white, and blue, dial 520-751-1041. Now, back to the American Warrior.
And we lit up your world.
Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. Your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We've got Jason Redmond, Navy SEAL, on the telephone live. Jason, I got like 6 pages of show notes here, but you're a pro, probably not going to get to all of it. And you know what? That plan, the best plans never survive first contact with the enemy. That's where I am now, because we have a caller who wants to say a few things to you. I don't know who it is. Caller, who's this? Welcome to American Warrior Radio.
This is Jay Dobbins.
Sitting here
in Tucson listening to my friend.
Jason, I told you, it's Jay's town, brother. You mentioned his name, and bam, he's there. It's like a bat signal.
Exactly. And you know, good friends are like that anywhere in the world. They just drop in, and they're there for you. And Jay Dobbins, the epitome of that.
Now,
plus, he's part of a small club, the Slow Movers Club.
Jay, go ahead. Your turn to retort. I think he's calling you slow.
Yeah, I didn't say anything because I have nothing to say with that. I have to agree to it.
Well, Jay, you know, said that football coach called you the fastest slow guy he's ever met, the NFL coach.
Yeah, right. And thus my athletic career in a nutshell.
You know, Jason, Jay shared a photo with me of both you guys. I don't look like it was at a book signing. For your respective books. In this case, it was Jay's new book, and Jason, it was yours, The Trident. Fellows, how did you first cross paths? How did you meet?
Well, you know, like for me, Jay represents what most of us would hope to be, but very few are capable of. I think we'd like to imagine ourselves as being brave and heroic under the worst, you know, unimaginable circumstances, like Jay was, but really, can we? Could we do that? I know personally, like I fell short of the standard that he set, you know, in my own events. There's a lot of people out there in the world that I admire, but there's very few that I consider a hero. And Jay is a hero to me.
I got nothing to add to that. Jason?
Hey, thank you, brother. And likewise, I mean, you know, heroism and courage is across so many different dynamic spectrums, and I think that's what people need to understand. I think everybody has the ability to be a hero. I mean, I look at what Jay did in his career, and the level of pressure and stress he went under so deep undercover for all those years, you know, I can't imagine. That's a whole different level of things that I actually didn't have to experience. So, you know, Jay, likewise, back at you, brother. You know, it's an honor to know you. And I think for anybody out there that's listening that thinks, oh, I couldn't do this or I couldn't do that, you know, heroism is just driving forward. Courage doesn't mean you're not afraid. It just means you continue to move forward despite fear. And so many people in life, fear is what drives them. You know, they don't ever go after their hopes and dreams. They never accomplish anything because they live in this bubble of fear. And Jay Dobbins obviously stepped out of that realm for many years of his life, continues to do it now. I was fortunate enough to be able to do the same thing.
Well, there you go. And I'll tell you one other thing you guys have in common, other than the fact you've both been shot. And you know what? I'll let you resolve between yourself which wound was worth and who got shot with a BB gun and who didn't. But Jay Dobbins, quick chance for a shameless plug. Both of you have also been in film and television. Jay, your film is in studio right now, correct? Let us know about that.
Yeah, it's out. I consulted and had a small role in a film that's in theaters now called Den of Thieves. you know, Jason's a movie star, has got like actual, like a much grander, bigger role in his film. I saw him on Hawaii Five-0. He's very great on screen. You know, you look at a guy who got shot up like he did, got tore up like he did, and he's still more handsome than I am. The guy took a bullet in the face and he's still more handsome than me, which I'm not very happy about. But I'll tell you this, like I'm enjoying your guys' conversation. I don't want to hijack this. I just wanted to say hello to JJ. I'll see you in a couple weeks out here in Tucson. And anybody that is looking for something to do the night of the 9th of February, the morning of the 10th, you would really, really do yourself a favor to come out and hear Jason Redman in person, see him face to face, shake his hand. See firsthand how humble and gracious and inspiring and amazing he is. And with that, I'm going to hang up and let you guys entertain me for the rest of your show.
Great. Hey, Jay, thanks for calling American Warrior Radio. We need a J1 and J2. Let's Jay, thank you so much for your service. Folks, listen to him. You know, Jay protected us on the home front. Jason protected us abroad, and they're both heroes and sheepdogs. And Jason, I tell you real quick, coming back, I want to cover two things. One is you talked a little bit about the Overcome Academy, but that's I want to expound on that a little bit, because that's a new initiative you've got that's going to debut, if I'm not mistaken, February 19th. And it really strikes the heart of something I feel strongly about, is helping not just the business community out there overcome, but to some extent the warriors themselves overcome. These are not damaged goods. These men and women have got wonderful skill sets, and they bring a lot to the table. But as I understand the idea of the Overcome Academy, you're helping them to blossom within themselves, to go out there and actually and make this a reality. Is that – it's your program. You can explain it better than I can.
Ben, no, you're on point. You know, the idea behind the Overcome Academy is to build leaders. Our military members learn so much about leadership, but sometimes they don't realize it, especially when you get out into the civilian world. The military is a very structured environment. And for all of us, including myself, who grew up in the military, I got out into the civilian world and I struggled for a while. It's easy to get loose and try and do everything you can because you no longer have this structure that constrains you and focuses you on your mission. So the Overcome Academy is teaching these guys how to lead themselves, how to build structure, and most importantly, to get them back out in the community as leaders. You know, I want the sign when someday we have a building, I want the sign over the classroom to say, through these doors, leaders are forged. Mm-hmm. We know for a fact, it is fact, that after World War II, our World War II veterans came home and almost 50% went back out in the community as leaders, whether they started their own business, whether they got into politics, whether they're involved in the community. We're not seeing that same ratio. As a matter of fact, it is abysmal. Pew Research did a study, I want to say, in 2011, and only 4.5% of our 9/11 veterans were getting out and starting their own businesses into leadership. I think that's slowly growing, but I think we are at a time in our nation where we absolutely, unequivocally need to bring back the grit and resiliency that made our country into what it is. And who knows that better than anyone out there? It's our military members. We just need to teach them how to translate their military skills into skills and verbiage that works in the civilian world. And that is what the Overcome Academy is about. We're looking for companies that want to sponsor these warriors. These warriors, we teach them how to speak. They'll come back and speak for that company. We're looking for successful business leaders who want to be mentors for these guys and gals. This is really an incredible program. I am honored to say that we've already got some great businesses who are very interested, and we need the funding to scale this program across the country. Right now, it's going to start here in Virginia Beach, but our plan over the next 5-10 years is to have Overcome Academies all across the country to take care of our wounded warriors, get them back out in the community as leaders, and drive our country forward with our veterans who have these incredible, incredible skills.
Outstanding. Jason, thank you so much for that. Folks, look into this. It's called the Overcome Academy. Jason, can they find more about that at your website, softspoken.com, or where do they go to get more information?
Go to combatwoundedcoalition.org and click on the link for Overcome Academy. We are We actually were in the process of updating it because the program has been moving so fast, we actually need to update the website for the newer stuff we're doing. It's grown and adapted, and it's really coming together as we get ready to run this very first program. February 19th, I got 13 amazing Wounded Warriors going through. They span all branches. I have three female Wounded Warriors, race, color, creed. It's amazing. And these are this is the first class that we're going to put through and get them back out in the community, shaping our nation.
Okay. I tell you what, Jason, I'm running out of time here. Ross, how am I doing?
About 2 minutes.
Okay. So list the not the BBG dumb question of the week, which I usually get. This is a serious question, but I wanted to ask you this. It's not a concern for me, but we're seeing warrior caste now develop in the United States, and your family is just such a perfect example. Going back generations, your brothers and sisters, all in the military. You know, I don't know about your children, but what are your thoughts on that, about the idea that now we've got a increasingly shrinking number of Americans carrying this burden of defending our country and our ideals?
It's dangerous on a whole lot of different levels, because this is one of the things we did a lot of research to prepare for the Overcome Academy, working with Old Dominion University. And not only is it dangerous because we have this very small demographic, less than 2% of our nation having served now and serving in this current war. So there's a huge disconnect between the civilian world and appreciating what our military members go through and obviously what happens on the battlefield. But there's a reverse effect happening with the veterans themselves. They're coming home, and there's a growing level of disdain that some of our veterans are having for the civilian world, because they don't understand them. They don't want to understand them. They don't understand the structure, how we do things in the military, the very direct, blunt nature. And it is a growing problem. We are having warriors who come home and they say, I don't want anything to do with the civilian world. I'm going to go buy a compound out in the middle of nowhere, and that's where I'm going to live out my days. And that is very harmful for our nation. We need our veterans to come back. We sacrifice so much to go forth and fight a war, to fight a threat against our country, to try and protect the citizens here. I want to know that my children and grandchildren have a great future. So I'm telling these guys and gals, your time serving is not over, because we need you now. We need you to take off your warrior hat and put on your civilian leader hat. The skills you learn in the military work. Civilians need to understand that our military members have amazing skills. We may not speak the same language, but they can come together and we can make that happen.
Wonderful. Jason, thank you so much for your time. Ladies and gentlemen, you can hear him again, hear him live in Tucson at the Freedom Expo, February 9th and 10th. Let me just leave you with a quote from our guest today. The mark of any man or organization is not found in their past, but how they overcome adversity and build their future. Regardless of the overwhelming odds or opposition in your path, you always have the opportunity to overcome. It's your attitude that will affect the outcome. Quitting is never an option. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, all policies and procedures are to remain in place. Visit AmericanWarriorRadio.com for more. Take care.